Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters, our new Saturday morning agricultural news program. Let me introduce you to your host, farm broadcaster Ken Root from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Here we are in a new year. You might not be able to tell it from a distance. The weather's the same. Government shutdown the same. Volatile markets the same. Congress in conflict the same. However, there is always hope in the coming of a new year. The thing you need to do is have faith in yourself. You can get that from who you are or who you aren't. Here's George McGargill from Imogene, who writes some earthy songs to tell us about the guy we don't want to be.
He's got to turn his head to get through the door. He's caught everyone's eye, that's for sure. Got some mighty fine clothes, and those boots do shine. If you'd look at his buckle, well, you just might go blind. He's got a big hat, no cattle, got no horse, no saddle. Got some nice duds, what a stud. He's got a big hat, no cattle. Now the barmaid's impressed with his big roll of money, and everyone thinks, hey, this guy's got plenty. If they only knew how much he owed, they'd probably all say, Buster, hit the road. He's got a big hat, no cattle, got no horse, no saddle. Got a big head, no bread. He's got a big hat, no cattle. Now you'd think he was born in the saddle, for the way he walks. Ran 10,000 head of cattle by the way he talks. But he's never seen the back of a cow, so he's gotta move fast before someone finds out. He's got a big hat, no cattle, got no horse, no saddle, got no range. He's small change, he's got a big hat, no cattle. He's got a big hat, no cattle, got no horse, no saddle, got no range. He's small change, he's got a big hat, no cattle.
Thanks, George. Nobody can predict where things are going in the year ahead, but those with the best information are best prepared to act rather than react. Today we have three interviews for you. Dustin Hoffman looks at current trade issues with China. We'll have a meeting with U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators on Monday in China. Some are predicting the two superpowers will cool down the conflict, but agriculture wants the tariffs to go away and get back to sales of U.S. commodities as normal. I also spoke to Arlen Suderman, economist with Intel FC Stone, about what he thinks the corn, soybean, and animal protein markets will do. He's a level-headed Kansan. When he chews tobacco, runs out of both sides of his mouth. Arlen has some interesting observations, but their reality minus 3 months, the 1st of April, for Iowa farmers, it's when reality begins. Finally, Anna Hastert is trying to become an entomologist, last week on soybean gall midge and this week on soybean cyst nematodes. Back with you again. This is Ken Root, joined by Dustin Hoffman, our supervising editor for the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Dustin, we're in a new year. We kind of wanted the last year to go away and get started with the new year. I think for many people in agriculture, there is a target date right now, and that is January the 7th, when supposedly the U.S. and China will meet again. But you've been following what's been going on, and where we are now and what we might expect. So what's your view of the situation right now since that ceasefire was arranged in the trade war?
You know, Ken, it's been one of those things that, you know, you're cautiously optimistic. I mean, we know we wanted to get China to the trade table, and we and at least to the negotiating table, I should say. And we wanted to be able to get talks going, and it looks like that's what's going to be happening. They agreed in the beginning of December to buy agriculture products. Of course, we again didn't know how much it was going to be and or what it was going to be. We have seen some small purchases of soybeans, but nowhere near the volumes that they would normally buy if we wouldn't have had a trade issue right now. But right now, January 7th is the day we're hoping for. The negotiators are going to be meeting in China to sit down and start hammering things out, or at least start some talks that they can build on. Both Presidents Trump and Xi have said that they're optimistic about the talks and that things can go well. And that's definitely something agriculture and many other industries are watching as well.
Dustin, I know that soybeans, of course, have been center stage, and China has bought far fewer soybeans in this marketing year than they normally have in the past. But they've also bought some rice from the United States. Has China ever bought rice from us before?
No, they haven't. As far as I can tell, if it has been, it's been a long time coming. The Chinese importers have just gotten approval to start bringing U.S. rice back into the country. Now, of course, that would be a huge market for rice growers, and the rice growers are very excited about getting into that market. Again, it's going to be a matter of how much they are able to buy. Of course, we're not a large supplier of it. Most of our supply does go to export, but the statistics I've seen is that what we produce in a year, China could consume in 14 days.
That's amazing. You know, all through the years, we've been bringing up this issue of USA's major crops, and it's, you know, corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton. Rice drops into this, and we are a major exporter of rice, but as far as a producer of rice, we're very small. And I asked a congressman one time, I said, why is that? And he said, well, the countries that produce rice eat all of it. So there's very few countries that export rice. I find that interesting that we have that imbalance. Is China indicating that they're short on rice, or is this just some novelty thing that they want to buy some rice from the U.S.?
You know, that's really hard to tell right now. I have not heard any really hard, firm statistics or been able to dig anything up on what they're needing for rice consumption. Again, 14 days, if you're falling short, doesn't buy you a whole lot. I mean, it is 2 weeks, but, you know, it might be still falling under that category of, you know, good faith, showing that they're going to buy some ag products, and even opening the door for ag products that haven't been in before. You know, that might be a backdoor way of saying that they're willing to take things further and negotiate in good faith, that not only are going to resume buying some products, they're even going to start allowing a few more into the country. You know, and that's just speculation on my part.
Well, appeasing us sounds logical, that they could do something like this. We've got this deadline that the U.S. has imposed of saying that if we don't get a trade deal by March the 1st, we're going to jack up the tariffs again. What do you think is going to happen?
You know, that's going to be a lot of that's going to hopefully come out on January 7th. It still gives us, you know, 2 full months in between now and then that we can get some negotiations done. And of course, this hasn't been a hard and fast rule. It is a hard and fast deadline if things weren't progressing. Now, President Trump has tweeted out before and has said in the past that if things are progressing, then he'll reassess at that time and consider, you know, revisiting, pushing it back a little bit. But he wants to see a good faith negotiations going on.
I still consider agriculture something of a victim in all of this, because much of what the U.S. was complaining about was technology that was having to be transferred and dumping of products into the U.S., and those issues haven't been resolved as of yet, except for the tariffs that have been placed on them. But yeah, agriculture is taking a lot of the hit because China stopped buying our soybeans when they put in a tariff on them.
Exactly. Agriculture is the easiest place to hit us. We are a high production country. You know, one out of every four rows or one out of every three rows goes to export. So, I mean, that is a big target for them to hit us where we're gonna feel it. You know, and we talk about some of the issues, though. Agriculture not immune to some of those issues. One of the other issues that we didn't bring up there was the stealing of technology, and it's happened where a Chinese national was caught trying to bring traded seeds out of a company's test farm, I believe right here in Iowa, that was caught, and that's just one aspect of some of the practices that the Trump administration says needs to stop.
Well, Dustin, we'll follow it closely. It comes next week. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Ken.
Coming up, an intelligence analyst from F.C. Stone, who tells us how he sees 2019 unfolding.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up to date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
It's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. Like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk. They hear you. For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
I always like to talk to economists who are still tied to reality. Arlen Suderman is from Kansas and has sort of a sophisticated, oaky voice. We talked yesterday, and he made several forecasts for the coming year. If we were to talk the corn and soybean market to begin with, what could move those markets higher in the year ahead?
We've become pretty good at producing, so the question is demand, and central to that question is China. China is the world's largest importer of commodities, and we're now in a trade disruption with them. So we need to see significant quantities go overseas with our production efficiencies, and China offers an opportunity for that. I think perhaps the best opportunity for that may lie with the corn, between corn and soybeans, because right now African swine fever has started to cut into demand for soy meal, and Brazil and Argentina are providing a large supply of competitive soybean supplies right now as well. On the other hand, corn, even if we do not include China, we're seeing growing demand around the world that other countries are having trouble meeting that demand, and it's starting to increase our exports even without China. But it also pencils economically into the equation for China to import U.S. corn. And so we're hearing chatter on the ground in China that there could be anywhere from 8 to 12 million metric tons of corn going to China right now because of the economics. And if that were the case, that could have a dramatic positive impact on the balance sheet. And so if you help the corn balance sheet, you start to help the soybean balance sheet as well. And so when you look at what are the best opportunities, that would probably be the biggest opportunity, is get such a deal and see that business occur.
Could I have you clarify that a bit, though? You're saying a potential for 12 million metric tons of corn, but in the years that we've been selling them 30-plus million metric tons of soybeans, will that number be down to a fourth of that or less?
If we open it up right now, all the talk on the negotiation seems to be on opening it up just to let China buy from whoever has the best value on soybeans rather than a guaranteed purchase amount. So if that's the case, in order for us to sell soybeans to China, we have to be a better value price quality-wise than what is South America. And that likely means considering the massive crop they're preparing to harvest now and the large supplies that we have left over, a price war, a race to the bottom, so to speak, to see who can sell to China in the months ahead. And I think that's a real concern and a real problem. And so overall, we see demand in China flattening out, if not pulling back a little bit because of African swine fever and increased production of dried distillers, grains, and solubles within China. So we don't have the growth in demand for soy meal in China that we had regardless of the trade war. So that means a rapidly expanding production base has to compete for a very flat, at best, demand base. And that probably means lower prices unless corn can buy some acres away from soybeans.
Has Intel SC Stone come out with any price range that you think corn and soybeans might trade at during 2019?
Soybeans, in order to fix the balance sheet, so to speak, need to lose about 10 million acres, because even with the beans that COFCO has purchased, and even if they purchase another 2 million metric tons, we're so far behind the pace needed to hit USDA's target for the year. We could still see USDA lower its export target and raise its ending stocks estimate closer to a billion bushels. So 10 million acres, we lost that kind of soybean acres back in 2007, but it took a new crop soybean to corn price ratio of approaching 1.9. Well, if you assume December corn at $4, that would mean November soybean somewhere around 770. So that's the risk that we have on a price if we're simply going to use price to discourage soybean acres.
This is almost heresy to say here in the state of Iowa, but between now and planting time, should farmers look at planting something other than corn or soybeans?
That would really change the structure of the Iowa markets for sure. In this day and age, I think we constantly have to be looking for alternatives. We constantly have to be vigilant of what are the other options out there. Is there something else that could be giving me greater opportunity? Because it's usually those people who are the front runners in some of those trends who benefit most from making the change. And so while we're deeply ingrained in a corn-soybean rotation in the state of Iowa, I would encourage people to constantly be examining alternatives.
Do you think the cattle market, especially with cheap grain, could remain profitable in 2019?
I do see opportunities for the cattle market, really for the whole meat complex. And first and foremost is the African swine fever problem in China, which is going to, we believe, require significant imports of protein. And some of that won't just be pork, it'll be poultry, it'll be beef. Now, Chinese consumption of beef is very low right now, but it is rapidly expanding. And as China imports pork from other areas of the world, including the United States, and raises pork prices, then that causes the consumer to switch to beef some as well in those other places, in those other markets.
That's Arlen Suderman, economist with Intel FC Stone, based in Kansas City. Back in a moment with Anna comparing a soybean pest to high blood pressure. Yeah, it's a stretch for me too.
Now, here again is Weekend Ag Matters host, Ken Root.
There's a pest in your soybean field that's very hard to see, but it robs growers of yield every year. I would say every farmer knows what it is, but most are confused about how to treat it. Anna Hastert is our digital editor and farm broadcaster, and is quite interested in this little organism that lives in the soil. Anna, what is it?
Well, Ken, it's the soybean cyst nematode.
And what's new on the soybean cyst nematode front in being able to deal with this pest?
Well, not a whole lot is completely new in regards to soybean cyst nematode, but per usual, the soybean cyst nematode is showing resistance to the resistance. I recently spoke to Greg Tilka, who works at Iowa State University and is also the co-leader of the SCN Coalition. And he gives a background of what soybean cyst nematode has looked like over the years. So let's hear from him and where soybean cyst nematode was a few years ago and what that looks like now today.
Well, for the decade of the 90s, we focused on having farmers check their fields because many farmers had soybean cyst nematode and did not know they had it. So scouting was the first step towards managing soybean cyst nematode. Now, once a farmer discovers he or she has SCN in their fields, then it was pretty simple for a while to just rotate between non-host corn. So anytime farmers grow a crop of corn, that's not a host crop for the nematode, so numbers will dwindle between 5% and 50%. And then in the soybean side of the rotation, farmers had hundreds and hundreds of resistant soybean varieties to pick from to grow. And so rotating corn and soybeans in fields that have soybean cyst nematode did us very well through the decade of the 2000s. And then starting early in this decade, we discovered that the nematodes in our Iowa farm fields, those nematode populations were becoming resistant to the resistance. And that's because all the seed companies were using the same set of resistance genes. So we now live in a world where resistant soybean varieties don't work as well as they used to. But we have a final new tool, or perhaps not final, but we have a new tool in the management toolbox, and that's seed treatments. And so starting about the mid-2000s, seed coatings or seed treatments could be purchased that provided added protection.
So what Tilke is saying here is that soybean cyst nematode has proved more challenging to control year after year. And so this SCN coalition is advising growers gives growers some treatment options and maybe how they can better control this pest moving forward.
Well, that seems to be the whole thing. I mean, it's been growing in its numbers. People have become more aware as they're getting higher yields that when they get a cut in yield, something did it. And so I guess, how can producers get a better grip on this pest?
Well, the number one thing that the SCN Coalition has recently recommended to growers is to start doing some soil sampling in their fields. The recommended time for that is to do soil sampling before every third or fourth soybean crop. Some other good methods for control that won't give you complete control, but help in the general effort to control this pest a little bit better is by planting a resistant soybean variety, so resistant to the soybean cyst nematode, after you plant non-host corn. Another option is just keeping a good eye and good track on what soybean cyst nematode pressure looks like in your field. Again, you can achieve that through soil sampling. And then also the last and the newest management tool is seed treatments. This can give you just a little bit more protection in regards to soybean cyst nematode. But all in all, you want to use that whole variety of management tools that I just discussed. You want to use all three of those for the best possible outcome in managing this pest and kind of seeing a little bit less impact in your fields. You know, this is actually Greg Tilke's analogy that he used when I spoke to him on the phone recently. He said, you know, Anna, soybean cyst nematode is a lot like high blood pressure. You go to the doctor, you get checked for high blood pressure, they confirm that you have high blood pressure, and it doesn't stop there. The doctor's constantly checking in with you, making sure that they're monitoring that high blood pressure, making sure that it doesn't get any higher than it already is, and just keeping a good watch on that to make sure that their patient has good health. Well, the same applies for soybean cyst nematode. Farmers need to be monitoring soybean cyst nematode, and that's why the SCN Coalition is recommending that farmers get out into fields and do soil sampling before every third or fourth soybean crop. They want farmers to know exactly what that pressure looks like on their farms, because chances are if you don't test it, it might actually be higher than you think it is. You might have a little bit more pressure than you had originally thought. So by going in and pulling these samples from your field, you're getting a better idea of what that pressure looks like in your field. And who knows, maybe the pressure is less. So then if the pressure is less in your field than you had originally thought, after soil sampling, you can go back and look at those control methods that you've been using, whether it be seed treatments or using resistant soybean varieties. Then you can go back to those methods of control and say, this is what's working on my operation. And you can continue to use those to minimize the damages that soybean cyst nematodes causes on your field. So again, monitor that pest. At the end of the day, it comes down to yield, and that's really what's going to make a profit for you or not. You need to keep an eye on this pest to get the best results possible from your soybean fields.
Thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you, Ken.
That's our show for today. Hopefully, we informed, inspired, and entertained you. If so, come back next week and tell a friend. For Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman, the Real Reporters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network, I'm Ken Root. Thanks for listening.